There you go. Check 1 2. Check 1 2. Check 1 2.
the joint session of the 61st Wyoming Legislature, general session, will please come to order. Senator Bebout and Representative Shepperson and Roscoe will escort the First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Meade, and the Governor, Matthew H. Meade, to the joint session. The body will be at ease until the sound of the gavel.
Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, it is my pleasure to announce the following guests. The Honorable William Downs, Chief United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Burns and Representatives Stubson and Freeman. The Honorable Clarence Brimmer, Senior United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senators Emmerich, Representatives Patton, and Connolly. The Honorable Alan Johnson, United States District Judge for the District of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Barnard and Representatives Campbell and Barbudo. The Honorable Michael Golden, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Hicks, Representatives Nicholas and Throne. The Honorable William Hill, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Rothfuss and Representatives Green and Escobel. The Honorable Barton Voigt, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Landon and Representatives Burkhart and Blake. The Honorable James Burke, Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court, escorted by Senator Martin and Representatives Croker and Byrd. The Honorable Cindy Hill, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, escorted by Senator Jennings, Representatives Laux and Botten. The Honorable Joe Meyer, State Treasurer, escorted by Senator Peterson and Representatives Eklund and Hunt. The Honorable Cynthia Cloud, State Auditor, escorted by Senator Nutting and Representatives Greer and Kasparek. The Honorable Max Maxfield, Secretary of State, escorted by Senator Cooper and Representatives Runnish and Petroff. The Honorable Marilyn Kite, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Wyoming, escorted by Senator Perkins, Representatives Crone and Korberg. The First Lady of Wyoming, Carol Mead, and His Excellency, the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Mead, escorted by Senator Bebout, Representatives Shepperson and Roscoe.
I would like to invite Reverend Vite to please give the invocation, and if you would please remain standing.
Our governor has asked that the flags be at half mast, so I would ask for a moment of silence for those in Arizona who have been injured, and then I will offer a prayer for this legislative session. Let us have a moment of silence. And now a prayer for this legislative assembly. O God, the fountain of wisdom, whose will is good and gracious, and whose law is truth. We beseech thee so to guide and bless our senators and representatives in Congress assembled, and to guide and bless Governor Mead and all of the elected officials. Be their words, their vision, their compassion, and their justice. And may they enact such laws that please thee, to the glory of thy name and for the welfare of this people. For it is in your name that we pray. Amen.
You may be seated. Members of the 61st Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I present His Excellency and the Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Mead.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Please be seated. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Please.
Thank you. What a wonderful, wonderful, warm welcome. I am so pleased to be here today. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, members of the 61st Wyoming Legislature, fellow elected representatives, Chief Justice, members of the judiciary, and to you, the citizens of Wyoming, including those in our schools and our troops abroad who may be tuning in today by means of various media. Howdy. Good morning. Today, for the first time, I'm pleased to announce we have live internet video feed. We'll see how it turns out, but as you know, connectivity is important to our state, including the opportunity for our citizens to see our legislative process at work. Thank you for the opening prayer. I thought it was appropriate reflection upon the beginning of these proceedings. It was a fitting and lovely prayer. I thank you all for the moment of silence because our thoughts and prayers go out today to all the victims of the tragic shooting in Tucson, Arizona last weekend. There is no place for such violence in our democracy. It was a despicable act. Sworn in last week as our state's 32nd governor, I have the privilege this week of delivering my first State of the State address. This is a commencement. It is the start of a process. More important are the actions that will follow it, for I plan to move forward with the platform I campaigned on last year. At the heart of that platform are the following priorities: jobs in the economy, connectivity, infrastructure, assisting cities, towns, and counties, streamlining government, education, and dealing with federal issues on matters vitally important to our state. I'll talk about each of these areas today because they will be the focus of my efforts. Before I begin my remarks, there are a few preliminary matters I'd like to cover. First of all, I will take some time and the privilege, I guess, to tell you that today is a special day. Today, 11 years ago, my son Pete was born. Today is his birthday. So, son, happy birthday. We are very proud of you, Pete, and Mary, we are very proud of you. You were just great this last year. I want to tell you that Pete's a smart young boy, and I would not be surprised. He seems to have a tendency towards the legal field. As an example of this, a couple days ago, he was telling me, hey, Dad, you know what happens when I get in trouble with my teacher? I said, what's that? He said, I take the Sixth Amendment. And I said, Pete, you mean you take the Fifth Amendment? He said, that too. So I'm not sure if he'll be a prosecutor. That sounds more like a criminal defense attorney to me. My wife, Carol, it is so nice to have you here. Thank you for all the support you've given me over the last year. Carol is a great reviewer of speeches. And before I give a speech, I always want her eyes to look at it. So I was pleased this morning. We've had a lot of late nights and not a lot of sleep the last couple of weeks. And so I was pleased this morning as I got her up and she took her first look at my comments today that she said, I've just got a few brief suggestions, which was rare because usually it's a few whole lot of suggestions. And she said, first of all, because this is a process where you're getting involved in where there is compromise and deal struck, perhaps because you've got not a lot of sleep lately and because I've read your speech, you should say, listen, have them agree if they don't fall asleep during your speech, you won't fall asleep either. But before you would agree to that, you should also know that her really serious comment was, I think you should start the first line starting with, in conclusion. So those are her views. I want to thank, I want to thank Governor Friedenthal and his staff for working with me and my staff to make such a smooth transition. It really worked extremely well. And I think it's appropriate to thank Governor Friedenthal and Judge Friedenthal for their 8 years of excellent service to Wyoming. Governor Friedenthal called me on the phone this morning and I wasn't sure it was to give me last-minute advice or last-minute grief, but I did get something from him, and he was very kind in his comments. I also want to thank the legislature, my fellow elected officials, Max Maxfield, Cynthia Cloud, Joe Meyer, and Cindy Hill, and the people in their offices, all who've extended courtesy and cooperation this past week. They've provided a great welcome to me. I also want to congratulate again the 24 new legislators who won election and have taken up their places for the first time in these wonderful chambers. New members bring many good ideas and fresh constituent views, and I am pleased to be starting out with you. I'd also have some people I'd like to recognize. Eastern Shoshone Business Council member Willie Nosey, Northern Arapaho Business Council Jim Shakespeare, and Lydell Whiteplume are here today. I worked with the Tribal Business Councils often when I was U.S. Attorney, and now I greet you in a different capacity as Wyoming's governor. Welcome. Major General Ed Wright, the Adjutant General of the Wyoming National Guard, is in the gallery today. General Wright has had a long, distinguished military career. He has served as Adjutant General since 2003. General Wright's entire tenure as Adjutant General was served in wartime. It included more than 20 Wyoming National Guard deployments, which involved more than 4,500 soldiers and airmen. Additionally, during his term, Camp Guernsey has become a state-of-the-art facility, training roughly 900,000 military from around the state, from around the country, from around the world. He will be retiring in March, and we recognize him today for his distinguished service to our state and our country. Thank you, General Wright. Also in the gallery today is Lieutenant Colonel Bruce Rowe, 187th Airlift Wing Commander. Lieutenant Rowe led 200 personnel on the most recent Wyoming Air National Guard deployment in Afghanistan. Those airmen returned home in December. Colonel Rowe has deployed 6 times since September 11, 2001. Welcome, Colonel Rowe. Major Dane Rogers, C Company, 5th Battalion, 159th General Air Support Aviation Regiment, is also in the gallery. He is the deployed unit commander for Charlie Med, our medevac helicopter unit, the most deployed unit in the Wyoming Army National Guard. Major Rogers and the Army National Guard soldiers under his command will leave for a one-year mission to Afghanistan tomorrow. This will be his 4th deployment. Please join me on safe journeys and a welcome home in 1 year. Thank you, sir. I want to recognize and thank all Guard members for their service. It means so much to our state and our country. I specifically want to mention our appreciation to the military personnel serving far away from their homes. Words do not do justice to the sacrifice you're making. The sacrifice of the brave men and women of the military and their families allows us to be safe, and we are grateful. They support us, and we send our thanks today and every day. Please join me in applauding the fine men and women who are serving or who have served our nation's armed forces. I want to recognize the achievements of our fine teachers and students from around the state. One teacher from each of the state's 48 school districts receives a Teacher of the Year award, and from that group, a panel of parents, teachers, and legislators selects the statewide Teacher of the Year. We have with us the teacher selected last fall to receive this year's award. Please welcome Lori Graves. Lori teaches third grade at Bighorn Elementary School, and she is the 2011 Wyoming Teacher of the Year. Lori, you represent all the fine teachers we have in Wyoming, and I thank you for being here and for your excellence in the classroom. We have a couple of our outstanding students with us. James Wilson is 9 years old. He is an award-winning pianist from the UW Lab School in Laramie. James won his division of the Asian American Music Society 2010 International Competition and performed at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. in December. And I will tell you that if you haven't done it, you should get on and watch that clip, because banging the 88s doesn't describe what this young man can do. It's amazing. So thank you very much and congratulations. Taylor Ballack is with us today. He is Wyoming Spelling Bee champion for 2010. Taylor is from Clear Creek Middle School in Buffalo. Taylor represented Wyoming in the National Spelling Bee last spring. My staff advised me to use the word that he won the competition on. I could not spell it, let alone say it. So just say it was very difficult, and we congratulate you very much. You both represent all the many accomplished students in attending school in Wyoming. We are proud of you both and expect great things from you in the future. We have our state emerging leaders. Mark and Susan Kupke are here from Lusk. Carrie Mahanovich is here from Pinedale. These folks are representatives of those honored in 2010 for the 20 People Under 40 program. They are business leaders and they are community leaders. These are enterprising individuals, and they are blazing trails into the future, so we also welcome you both. When you look at people of distinction in Wyoming, and those mentioned today represent a few of many, many such people, we recognize the state of the state is very good. Wyoming's future is in capable hands. Beyond the people quotient, taking a look at the big picture, I will make a few general observations here. While some states face significant budget shortfalls, our state does not. The latest Craig information projects approximately $275 million available to the general fund budget reserve account due to higher energy prices, sales tax, and improving employment. Some states have lost population for one reason or another. We have not. We have seen a population growth just slightly over 14% over the last decade. The nation as a whole continues to face high unemployment. We do not. Wyoming started 2010 with an unemployment rate over 7%. But the latest reports for November indicate an unemployment rate that has dropped to 6.6%. Wyoming's rate is well under the national average, which has hovered in the mid-9% range or higher for some time. And we have abundant resources. We, of course, have great leaders. We have energy, wildlife, open spaces, agriculture, recreation, all of them world-class assets. We are the envy of many states, yet there remains much to be done in order to secure a better future. Because when the nation remains under an economic cloud, the cloud moves our way. With more than 6 out of every 100 workers out of jobs in Wyoming, we need to create more opportunities. Because I can tell you, for those working who cannot find work, the unemployment rate might as well be 100%. With our revenues tied largely to energy, we need to diversify our economic base and promote economic growth in general. With our communities still feeling the effects of the economic downturn, we need to provide an additional source of revenue to our cities, towns, and counties. It is good that we do not face a repeat of last year's fiscal austerity with 10% budget cuts and revenue shortfalls that affected everyone in the chain from the state on down. It is good that we have an unexpected amount of money for a supplemental budget, but the last few years have provided a wake-up call. We need responsible growth, growth that's right for the times and our needs, growth that does not compromise our values. Now for some specifics. This is a conservative state government, and we recognize that. A relatively small shift in commodity prices can have a dramatic effect on revenues. We should remain conservative, even after the good news of this week's CREG revenue adjustments, which provided us with an additional projected $22.7 million in revenues this biennium. Because this is a general session, only limited supplemental budget recommendations are before you. Governor Friedenthal proffered his supplemental budget recommendations in December. I concur with many, but not all of them. I will discuss some of the budget proposals today, but I will also appear before the Joint Appropriations Committee tomorrow for further discussion of the supplemental budget. Let me start by saying I support the additional $52 million in funding for highways and $52 million in funding for local governments, most of which should go to capital construction. That extra money this year will make reasonable progress towards addressing our infrastructure and local needs. I'll address this in detail later on. Although less than requested in Governor Friedenthal's recommendations, I do recommend $6.1 million to bring those state employees earning less than 90% of market pay to that market pay level. I consider this investment in our state workforce appropriate and necessary. We appreciate the work of state employees and want to give due recognition for it. Down the road, we should continue to reevaluate our economic picture and continue efforts to reach market pay for state employees based on regular and updated accurate data. I support $3.1 million in supplemental funding for performance awards only if there is a viable system for recognizing excellent performance by state employees. We should not reward average. We should reward excellence. We should reward success, and in order for that to happen, an evaluation process has to be meaningful. I mean to make it so. I am asking agency heads to sign a commitment letter. When they accept their positions, the commitment letter, among other things, includes a commitment to create an evaluation process for a realistic assessment of each state employee's performance. I expect agency heads using a meaningful evaluation process to be able to give their exceptional employment employees performance awards, incent those meeting expectations, provide assistance to struggling employees, and address non-performers. I also ask state agencies' heads for a commitment to approach the budgeting process with fiscal discipline. We should exercise restraint when it comes to dealing with public money and always keep a close eye on the size and cost of state government. This commitment letter I'm asking for is a first. Now, I remain skeptical that more dollars spent on buildings translates to a better education. Dollars spent on buildings are not dollars spent on teaching. Bricks do not an education make. Having said that, I understand that we are required by law to have a funding model, but I want a plan in place that convinces me that these dollars are being spent for the maximum benefit of Wyoming, its children, teachers, and citizens. Governor Friedenthal recommended $61.9 million for construction of school facilities. This, I remind you, is on top of the $1.2 billion appropriated between 2003 and 2010. It is on top of the $156 million approved last session. I will not support Governor Friedenthal's recommendation until I see an improved preference law is in place and enforced. I want to see a strong preference law and other contracting issues resolved before we pour more dollars through the supplemental budget to the School Facilities Commission. Some of you have assured me, and I take it your word, that this can be done and this can be accomplished this session. I will look for that bill before approving supplemental monies this session to build schools. The bottom line of my budget recommendation is that I have cut $22.1 million in general fund expenditures and $61.9 million in school capital construction spending program from the supplemental budget. Coupled with this week's Craig revenue forecast, the legislature has roughly $52 million in the general fund and $332 million in the school capital construction program available to you. Don't spend it all in one place. Perhaps better yet, don't spend too much of it at all. To create jobs and to grow and diversify our economy, we should build on Wyoming's natural advantages, our energy, ag, tourism, and great workforce. We should not just extract and export our energy. We should look for value-added projects that use some of our energy here. For example, our superb wind resources partner well with natural gas-fired turbines, which fill out the energy stream during lulls in the wind. We should develop both wind and gas-fired turbine projects where possible. I support the current efforts of those working on these types of projects. And why not manufacture wind turbine components here as well? Let's build the items needed to develop our wind resources right here in Wyoming. I can assure you this is doable. Such manufacturers are looking at Wyoming now, and I'm a supporter. This is an example of how we can build on Wyoming's natural advantages to diversify our economy and create jobs. Now, I know there's going to be a healthy debate about wind issues, property rights, taxation, eminent domain. I hope legislation that balances all the interests and keeps Wyoming's competitive wind companies in place and here in Wyoming will reach my desk this session. We need to continue to capitalize on all our natural advantages, not only with our wind, but our climate. We have a good weather climate for some industries, in particular for data centers. I support funding the money to recruit mega data centers. In Wyoming, we have what they need. And if you're in a state you don't have what they need, you can't get it. We have these natural advantages. We have a favorable weather climate with a low number of required cooling days. We can produce abundant, relatively inexpensive electricity. We have relative safety from natural catastrophes such as hurricanes. And we have available land. We also have an established track record with NCAR supercomputer being built in Cheyenne. That's why I support the allocation of $14.5 million in general funds for the recruitment of multiple mega data centers. Such centers bring support businesses and other enterprises along with them. It is my belief they are a business magnet. I supported the bill passed last year that exempted qualifying computer equipment from sales and use tax. I thought last year's bill provided an attractive and appropriate incentive for business, and I would call for reasonable additions this year, like for computer software, to improve upon it. Please take a look at that legislation. We must also continue to support all our extractive industries. With respect to coal, oil, and gas industries, I support research and development of carbon capture and sequestration technology. I am skeptical about man-made global warming without more and better science. But I am not skeptical about growing demand by our energy customers for cleaner coal and gas. And I'm not skeptical about oil industry's need for carbon injection technology for enhanced oil recovery. Improved technologies provide a benefit to companies and help them remain profitable. Wyoming is on the cutting edge of many technologies. We have laws in place and projects underway. Technology will be improved with projects like the UWGE coal gasification facility, the development of the DKRW project in Carbon County, and advanced and continued research at the School of Energy Resources. Technology will help keep our energy industry competitive. I will look favorably on legislation sent my way to foster science and commercial applications, remembering that advances in energy technology will only continue to occur if energy companies remain profitable.
I support continuing the manufacturing sales tax exemption. The current law has the exemption expire at the end of this year. I would remind you that 40 other states have this exemption, and Wyoming must remain competitive. Nearly 200 Wyoming businesses already use this exemption. And as we speak, as we are here today, manufacturers targeted by the Wyoming Business Council and my office anticipate this exemption. This includes manufacturers of wind tower components, about which I spoke earlier. Without this extension, we risk the real possibility these businesses will locate in other states. I hope you'll take up the issue of extending the manufacturing sales tax exemption, decide to extend it, and put a bill on my desk. I'm also keenly interested in legislation that will strengthen our ag and travel industries, which are vital to our state's economy, and I know you'll be considering such bills this session. For example, I support increases for rangeland assessment and for tourism promotion. We need to make, as we go forward, our state regulatory environment predictable and reasonable so businesses can plan and commit resources to our state. The backlogs and delays at the Land Quality Division within the Department of Environmental Quality are an immediate concern. The undue backlogs and delays need to be made a thing of the past sooner rather than later. The issue is addressed in my budget recommendations, which I'll lay out tomorrow. The fact that our state is fiscally sound and otherwise a desirable place means we can welcome with open arms businesses that are looking for a welcoming place. One of the ways we do that is with technology. Improving connectivity provides all sorts of possibilities. It allows us to deal with each other directly and daily, interactively, not just from the hours from 8 to 5. It increases business productivity and access to markets. I support using technology to maximum advantage, to improve state government, to improve the business climate for tech as well as other businesses, to enrich our personal and work lives, to improve the quality of patient health care through the use of electronic health records, to support better communication between physicians and patient, and prevent expensive duplication of testing. I support measures that will give our state the competitive edge from a technology standpoint. For example, we already have begun work with a private telecom provider to expand the high-speed fiber optic footprint across Wyoming. This expansion could increase bandwidth capacity more than tenfold to an additional 11 Wyoming communities. We're also working on lighting up dormant or dark fiber circuits that run across the southern portion of Wyoming into Salt Lake City and beyond. From an economic development perspective, this growth in connectivity will allow us the bandwidth necessary for mega data centers while also benefiting manufacturing and smaller businesses throughout many of our Wyoming communities. Our interstate highways and railroad network connect us all to the other states and all parts of the country, and they should help make us the business hub. The highways especially are important for business, personal, and tourist travel. I support additional supplemental appropriations this year for highways. Highway construction needs a reliable source of added funding. The recommended $52 million in supplemental funding this year makes reasonable progress, in my mind, on highway construction. Those dollars should be used to do what is needed most in 2011. I also support funding for water development projects. Water is a precious resource in the arid West. We need to use all our allocated amounts under the various compacts and court decrees. Water projects spur economic development across the board for energy, ag, tourism, industry. Our cities, towns, and counties need additional revenue. We saw this most starkly last year. I do support a legislative fix that would provide this revenue. Specifically, I support diverting one half of 1% of the statutory severance tax on minerals and splitting it into thirds, one third to local governments, one third to highways, and one third to the state's rainy day fund. This is money that will not only be used to invest in infrastructure, not only to invest in our localities, but also invest in savings. It's a good investment all the way around. As many of you know, the projected distribution would be about $52.15 million to each of the three recipient categories. I would like to see a greater percentage of the local government share go to fund projects. That is, 75% should be put towards capital construction and 25% for operations. I would like to see this investment, this one-half of 1% of the severance tax divided into thirds, be made permanent or long-term with a sunset provision of 7 years down the road to 2018. Now, I recognize there's serious disagreement about this proposal, and maybe that's understating it. I'm assuming your laughter is to mean nothing. And it's all right. There should be disagreement, as because it's a great deal of money. But we all agree that money should be wisely invested. Some want to place all that money in the rainy day fund. There's no question that our rainy day fund can serve us well during those times when the price of our natural resources have declined. But I have faith in Wyoming. And while we've had wise investments from the Treasurer's Office for many years, we also have to be aware during these shaky times where major financial companies, where auto manufacturers, where not just companies but entire countries are failing. Even the best investment decisions carry risks not seen for many decades. We have seen the results of these tumultuous times for outside investing, as we now are back in the black. But in the past year and a half, we have seen unrealized losses from state investments as of June 30th, 2009, of over $647 million. The realized losses were $201 million. This illustrates the volatility of the markets during this time. Now, we cannot take the risk out of investing in the markets, and with my proposal, we will continue investing in the markets with that 0.5% via the Rainy Day Fund. But we will also broaden our investment to Wyoming. Now, we all care greatly about our local communities, and this body has a good track record of supporting local communities. But do we continue along these lines during these shaky times, investing all of that money in companies that may be in other states and other countries, or do we believe in Wyoming? Do we believe in Wyoming enough? Our people, our towns, our counties, our small businesses, and our future to put Wyoming first. My proposal invests in local government, in infrastructure, in our highways, in our bridges, and continues to invest in our rainy day account as well. It addresses my goals of economic development in that our local governments can do all the beautification projects they want. But if they don't have adequate water, sewer, bridges, roads, landfills, the recruitment and retention of business is near impossible. One-third of this money will go to the Department of Transportation to address the needs of our roads and bridges. Now, we can disagree how much is needed. We can also disagree on other funding options. But hopefully we can agree that without safe, adequate roads, economic development and the enjoyment of our state will be diminished. Hopefully we can also agree that for the executive branch to defer maintenance on roads is not fiscally strong, it is operationally weak. If we do not invest today, we will require those that follow us to invest many more dollars in the future. I urge you to consider this method of funding our roads. As I said, one-third of that money will go back to local governments. And it's curious to me how many agree with me that the states are the backbone of the country, that the people closest to the problems are the best ones to solve the problem. And yet, when we talk about providing greater control to the locals in terms of money, we shy away. In making your decision, remember, just as some of you view the federal government with a skeptical eye, so too does a city council member look at Wyoming's capital. Do we trust local governments in the way we would ask Congress to trust us? We should. And this one-third is a way to show our faith in local governments. If not made permanent, a seven-year sunset provision, as I said, is a reasonable compromise that would give the legislature the opportunity to consider the matter again, but also show an ongoing commitment to local communities and allow for adequate planning and investing. Now, if you don't agree with my proposal, find an alternative. Find an alternative. Because we want and need predictable funding for local governments and highways, governments and for highways. Now, last week, I announced my support for legislation that would consolidate the Department of Workforce Services and the Department of Employment. I have reappointed Joan Evans as Director of Workforce Services. She is an excellent agency head. I have also appointed Joan to serve as the Director of the Department of Employment. I hope you will send me a bill that consolidates these agencies. We will create one-stop shop for related employment matters, reducing dual administrative costs. As you saw from yesterday, I have chosen Tom Forsland to head the Department of Health. He is a proven administrator with an established track record of building reserves and careful budgeting year after year as city manager of Casper. I would ask you to look at the department that Tom Forsland is inheriting. It is a big, unwieldy agency. It gobbles up more and more of the budget pie each year. We should take a serious look at reorganizing the Department of Health, but I want Mr. Forsland involved in the process. So in the meantime, I would ask for the authority for me to appoint the head of the Health Financing Unit and have that person report directly to me. I'm responsible for state agencies. Legislation is currently being drafted that would provide me greater latitude in appointing people within agencies. My responsibility to make sure people within agencies are fiscally responsible, provide outstanding service, and follow a vision for the state goes hand in hand with my ability to appoint. So I'd ask for your support of this effort. In Wyoming, we need to talk about education. And it is my belief the vast majority of teachers and administrators are doing an excellent job. But we recognize we're spending on a Cadillac plan and not getting Cadillac results. We all know we need to do better. We should not accept average. And we should be bold in our approach. And from where I sit, education is too important to remove any debate from the table. There are no sacred cows. From money spent on building schools to block grants provided to districts, let's look at everything. It's also fair to look at changing teacher contracts, but a simple statutory change to alter teacher contracts without more is not a cure-all. Great teachers should be rewarded. Poor teachers should be removed. But as you consider teacher contracts, it should not be done in a vacuum. We should recognize they face challenges. And not just from 11-year-old boys playing hooky. They face other challenges as well. We do not want teachers fired for the wrong reason or for no reasons. What criteria should be used? We want greater accountability, and accountability can only come from removing teachers for the right reason. That is, they're not doing a good job teaching. To determine the quality of teaching requires an objective standard. Failing the use of an objective standard, we presume the infallibility of administrators. We need a testing program that is administered in a way that will measure students and teachers alike in a manner that clearly identifies both successes and problems. The issue of charter schools is one I'm interested in moving forward. It is my belief that charter schools could provide some new ideas to be used at traditional schools. For this model to work, the charter schools cannot cherry pick the best students. Now, we all talk about local control, but I expect school districts to use block grant money, state money, in a way that puts our students in the best position to succeed. We cannot provide endless funds to school districts without results. So on these issues, I look forward to working with you. I look forward to hearing your ideas. I look forward to working with Superintendent Hill on education. And I would just say, I know it's complex. I know it's difficult. But we cannot ignore education. It is too important to our future. As I said in my inaugural address, the federal health care bill may be the best Congress could do. It is not the best we can do. Therefore, I support legislation that would establish a litigation fund related to the federal health care law. As you no doubt know, I have taken steps to join the Florida lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act. I understand, as some of you told me, the criticism in doing so, some because they like the act, some because they're worried about the expense associated with the lawsuit. I do not like the act. In my view, it is bad policy and too costly. This law will significantly increase our Medicaid rolls. Mississippi, for example, forecasts the overall cost to implement the Affordable Care Act in the state will be $1.7 billion over 10 years, including $443 million in year 10 alone. Now, while the federal government has committed to the bulk of the costs associated with Medicaid expansion, the last I checked, the federal government has significant financial problems of its own. On top of that, the federal promise does not cover all the additional expenses. Concerning the cost of the lawsuit, the current prediction is that it will cost us $1,000. And the Attorney General has been told it may not cost us a lot more than that at all. But I will tell you, frankly, even for a much, much larger amount, I am willing to fully test the legality of the law because it has implications beyond health care. While this is a Tenth Amendment issue, the law should be tested with the same force and vigor as if it was a First or Second Amendment to our Constitution that was being eroded. I believe that the rights of the states remain important, not just for legal principle, but because I believe the states can do a better job. Comparison of Wyoming's checkbook to Congress's checkbook is evidence that we can and that we have. I hope I will have your support in standing firm for Wyoming. Now, it's not enough to say no. We should continue to seek state solutions even as we fight the federal law. I support legislative proposals that advance state health care solutions, including expansion of the Healthy Frontiers pilot project begun last spring. That project has passed the initial test and is currently enrolling participants in both Cheyenne and Casper. Not a lot, but the process has been started. The expansion will give us the data and the experience that we need to develop more effective and less costly health care options. Now, there are other areas that will require Wyoming to be proactive. We are small in number, but large in our contribution to this country, and our voice should be heard. Challenges to our ability to manage our wildlife, to produce our energy, to regulate our water and air quality should not go untested. We demand a balanced approach that protects our beautiful state, yet allows for mineral development. It is the citizens of Wyoming, from those interested in conservation to those interested in development, those Wyoming people, us, it is we who should have the debate making the decisions for Wyoming. To turn the issue of balance over to D.C., the more we do that, the more the debate will be taken from our mouths, from these halls, from this building, and moved to Washington, where only three of our citizens, our congressional delegation, will be joined in the debate while the rest of us are relegated to listeners. As I said in my inaugural address, the best solutions for Wyoming come from Wyoming. I would ask for your support to keep Wyoming's voice strong. The death rate of misuse of narcotic prescription drugs exceeds all other illegal drug and drug driving deaths combined. We need to better monitor narcotic prescription drugs at a point of contact to prevent abuse and lower the death rate. This is one issue. There are many other issues that are of interest to me and to all of you during this session. Other pressing matters include other health issues, ag issues, law enforcement issues, our aging population. I will look closely at any legislation you put on my desk. There is much to consider, but I will tell you that I'm a conservative by nature. And on both sides of the aisle, we have conservative and practical people. And in this general session, I ask for an approach that begins the process of efficient, a streamlined government. I will tell you that from my point of view, I'm interested in those laws that will help those who cannot find work. I'm interested in laws that do not make small business owners shudder, wondering what rules and regulations will come out. We should pay attention to what matters most. This body has and will continue to set an example of vigorous but always civilized debate. And all of us are proud of the example that you set. Let's provide a framework where individuals through hard work, innovation, and dedication can enjoy the freedoms of Wyoming. Thank you for your opportunity to address you in this chamber, on your home court, so to speak. It's been an honor and it's been a pleasure. You are always welcome, all of you, in my office, and I would be privileged to have you visit me. The boxes are unpacked. The welcome mat is out, and the welcoming mat is in. And the door will be open. May we have the vision. May we have the courage and the faith to make wise decisions. May God bless us all, our great state, and our great country. Thank you very much.
Governor Meade, on behalf of the members of the legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. Thank you very much. Members of the 61st Legislature, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I now present the Honorable Marilyn Kite, Chief Justice of the Wyoming Supreme Court.
Thank you very much for that warm welcome. Mr. President, Mr. Speaker, Governor and Mrs. Meade, members of the 61st Legislature, elected officials, members of the judiciary, family, friends, and citizens of this great state, it is a true honor and privilege to speak to you today on behalf of the dedicated men and women of the Wyoming judiciary. And I thank you, President Anderson and Speaker Buchanan, for the invitation. As you all know, this is my first opportunity to speak to you as Chief Justice, and I am humbled and honored to do so. It is also the first time that many of you have sat in this legislature as members, and it is our new governor's first opportunity to share with us his vision of Wyoming's future. My memories of this chamber date back, and I am dating myself here, to Governor Hathaway's time when I was lucky enough to serve as an assistant attorney general for the newly founded Department of Environmental Quality. And in that capacity, I had the amazing opportunity to assist the likes of Malcolm Wallop, Warren Morton, John Turner, Tom Strook, Dave Nicholas, Al Simpson, and many, many others, as they worked to craft a balance between the development of this state's resources and the protection of its many natural wonders. I was really impressed then, as I am today, with the dedication and willingness to serve that's exhibited by this legislature. One of the few true citizen legislatures left in this country. And we all appreciate the personal sacrifice that each of you make to serve our democracy. What we are doing here today, bringing together the three separate and independent branches of government, constitutes an important tradition, symbolizing a unity of purpose, and provides us with a brief moment to speak to each other and to the citizens of Wyoming, as well as to listen to each other and appreciate the importance of the respective efforts on behalf of this state. All of the members of the Wyoming judiciary wish you energy, wisdom, and endurance, as I understand the work ahead of you. As you work to face the challenges of our state at this point in our history. We also wish you, Governor Meade, great success in your tenure. You follow the trail of many wise and dedicated individuals who sacrificed their personal lives to devote limitless time and energy to leading the way for our state. You have the particular great fortune to have unmatched role models within your own family for how to lead with integrity, humility, wisdom, and humor. And we know that they are smiling down on this chamber today. Congratulations. I know you have a busy agenda and are anxious to get started, and I will not delay you long, as I have promised several of you. But I do want to report on some changes in the judiciary over the past year and highlight some issues facing our branch of government. I suppose one of the most obvious changes is that after 4 years of accomplished leadership, Justice Barton Boyd has passed that mantle on to me. Justice Boyd's efforts over the past 4 years are far too many to mention, not the least of which was overseeing the design and construction of our newly remodeled Supreme Court building and leading the court system into the 21st century with electronic filing and docket management. On behalf of all of us in the judiciary, I want to thank you, Justice Voigt, for your devotion to the job, your diligence, and your ever-present sense of humor. And through it all, he kept, I'm sure you'll be pleased to know, completely current on his case assignments, and he sometimes seemed to have the opinion written before the rest of us got back to the office. You might also notice a particularly happy and relaxed expression on his face. We have all come to know that as the expression of a former Chief Justice. I want to thank my other colleagues on the Supreme Court, Justices Golden, Hill, and Burke, for their friendship, their professional support, and the confidence and trust they have shown in me by electing me as Justice Voigt's successor. In 2010, we said farewell to some old friends, and we welcomed some new. We were saddened by the passing of former District Judge Jim Wolf of Sheridan and retired Supreme Court Justices Al Taylor and Richard Thomas, each having a significant impact on the law of this state as well as its citizens. District Judge Nancy Guthrie of Jackson retired after 15 years of service, and our judicial selection process resulted in Jackson's Circuit Judge Tim Day being appointed to replace her. Experienced Jackson attorney Jim Ratta from the Teton County Attorney's Office was appointed to replace Judge Day. In Gillette, Circuit Court Judge Bill Edwards retired after serving 19 years in that very busy district. And Wendy Bartlett, an energetic and well-respected Gillette attorney from Campbell County Attorney's Office, was appointed to replace him. Most recently, District Judge Scott Scavdall of Casper announced his resignation after 7 years of service to pursue a career in the federal judiciary. Catherine Wilking, a respected Casper attorney with experience in civil and criminal law as well as juvenile issues, was appointed to fill that vacancy. Judge Wilking's formal installation will occur in a few weeks. As always, the Wyoming Judicial Nominating Commission performed efficiently, fairly, and free of political influence. As we watch with dismay the politicalization of the judicial selection in other states, we are once again thankful for the wisdom shown by this legislature and our citizens in the adoption of the constitutional amendment that established our method of judicial selection some 40 years ago. The Supreme Court and the Access to Justice Commission have been busy implementing the legislation this body adopted last year to provide funding through an increase in court filing fees to coordinate and support legal services for over 70,000 of our citizens that are financially eligible. We have had multiple statewide meetings. We have created a nonprofit corporation, the Wyoming Center for Legal Aid. We've appointed an initial board of directors for the center. We have drafted proposed bylaws and rules and reported our progress to this legislature as required by statute. The upcoming year will see much progress in this effort, and we are committed to fulfilling this body's intent to provide for justice for all of our citizens, not just those who can afford it. I want to take a minute or two to share with you some thoughts about the work of the Wyoming judiciary. As noted by Alexander Hamilton in Federalist Paper 78, the judiciary is the weakest of the three branches of government. We do not hold the power of the purse, and we cannot raise armies. We do, however, hold in our hands the lives and fortunes of thousands of Wyoming citizens every year, and we have the constitutional responsibility to protect the fundamental fabric of our society, the rule of law. We provide that level playing field that was envisioned by our founders, justice for all. In performing our work, we are facing some major challenges, and we're working hard to meet them. While statistics certainly don't tell the whole story, a quick look at our case filings shows that Wyoming courts are vibrant, busy, and getting their job done. The circuit courts have processed over 180,000 cases this past year, all of law enforcement citations. And the district courts have handled over 20,000 cases. And I would like at this point to ask the circuit and district judges who are here with us today to stand and be recognized for all of their service to this state. I'm also pleased to report that those cases that do reach the Supreme Court are being handled promptly, and we continue to rank near the top nationally for the number of opinions authored on an annual basis. Despite this good news, we, like the other two branches of government, face extraordinary challenges. And today, I want to talk to you about two of those in particular. Number one is how to become more efficient internally as we perform our jobs. And number two is how to reduce the cost and delay in civil litigation that our private citizens are experiencing. So let me talk about the first issue. How do we manage an ever-increasing workload with static or declining revenues? We are all well aware that other states have not been as fortunate as we have financially, and many have seen draconian cuts, resulting in closing some courts and thus denying those citizens access to justice. We are committed to assuring that we spend state resources responsibly and efficiently in order to assure that the citizens of Wyoming never face that prospect. Even though our budget represents only 2% of the entire state government budget, in response to decreasing revenues and in cooperation with the executive branch, we have worked to reduce any expenditures that aren't absolutely necessary. However, we don't have optional programs that can simply be eliminated. Our primary cost is for personnel to handle the caseload, the size of which is beyond our control. In recognition of that fact, we are examining our structure to see if we can become more efficient. The most obvious opportunity for enhanced efficiency is to utilize better the circuit courts. You know their jurisdiction is currently limited to misdemeanors and civil cases involving less than $7,000. That limit was set 15 years ago and needs to be significantly increased. That will allow us to take better advantage of those courts as well as to reduce the burden ever increasing on our district courts. In consultation with the Board of Policy and Administration as well as the circuit judges, we have proposed and the Joint Judiciary Committee supported an increase of that 15-year-old jurisdictional limit to $50,000. Senate File 15, which is a committee bill, will accomplish that change, and we urge your support of that legislation. While this change may have some impact on the clerks of both the circuit and district courts, we believe those impacts are manageable and should not be a reason for a less efficient judicial system. In addition to Senate File 15, we're working to improve our productivity through technology. Electronic filing and docket management is in place and functioning well in our court, in the Supreme Court, and we're about halfway through that effort in the district courts. As soon as that is complete, we will do the same in the circuit courts. We have installed public computer terminals in some circuit courts so that the public can electronically access non-confidential court dockets, and we plan to have the rest in place this year. You have generously and wisely provided us the funding necessary to accomplish our case management needs at the district court level, even in the face of a lot of budget reduction pressure, and recognizing that in the long run, we will reduce operating costs. And next session, we will be asking for more funds to do the same in the circuit courts. Now, we would like to claim credit for all of this progress, but honestly, we were a little late to this party. It's thanks to the leadership and the, dare I say, prodding from you that we have made this progress. Often, I'm sure you're not surprised to hear, institutions of government are resistant to change, and that is certainly the case with the judiciary. I learned recently that a cowboy who wants to participate in a roping event at Frontier Days can enter the competition, pay the entry fee, draw the steer or the calf, rope it, have the time immediately recorded, and the prize money calculated and paid the very same day, all electronically. Well, maybe not the roping part, but... Now, I don't know about you, but no cowboy I know likes change very much. The good old days were plenty good enough for them. So if cowboys can join the electronic age, I think judges can too. Don't you agree? Now, there's another technological leap that will have the most impact on our day-to-day productivity, and that will be when law enforcement is able to issue electronic citations, and ultimately the fines can be paid electronically. The Highway Patrol has begun to implement electronic citations, or e-citations, as we have called them, and they are responsible for a large part of our work. We have done the necessary work to allow the court's data system to accept their e-citations, and we understand they'll be ready to roll next summer, and we look forward to that day. Once the citation can issue electronically, the workload of our circuit court clerks will be substantially reduced. In some circuits, one full-time person is needed just to handle the paper and enter the data by hand. Although you don't have a specific request before you, we want to call your attention to providing funding to cities and counties so their local law enforcement can acquire that e-citation capability as well. We understand that a recommendation for such funding was contained in a report from Governor Friedenthal's Task Force on Impaired Driving, and we hope the executive branch will bring such a proposal to you soon. The resulting increase in speed and efficiency in processing those citations will have an obvious positive impact on law enforcement's ability to deal with repeat offenders. We're also working with law enforcement to facilitate the payment of fines electronically, and in fact, just this week, Laramie County began to implement its program to receive fines online. When we can do this statewide, we will dramatically improve the collection rate of fines. And with an outstanding unpaid fines in the range of $10 million, the fiscal benefit of that advancement is obvious. So we hope you'll keep that issue on your radar, so to speak. Finally, on the technology front, most of our judicial districts have video conferencing capability, and we are all learning how to use that tool effectively. Many judges are using it for arraignments, depositions, and other proceedings, thus reducing the cost and risk of transporting prisoners to and from the jail, minimizing lost judge time and the expense of their travel, and allowing cases to move forward more quickly. Last month, we held a statewide access to justice meeting with six participants from six different cities around the state. Everyone heard each other and saw each other clearly. We had participation from many that simply could not have attended in person. And also last month, we held our first Board of Judicial Policy and Administration meeting by video conference, and we saved $3,500 in hard travel expenses and about the same in the value of lost work time. And importantly, no lives were put at stake on our winter roads. So that's what we're doing to try to address efficiency internally. How do we address the growing discontent, our second challenge, with the cost and delay in civil litigation? Keeping in mind that our primary job is to provide fair and efficient justice to our citizens, we have initiated an effort to examine our own rules and procedures to see how we can do that better. We started by conducting a survey of Wyoming lawyers and judges, and not surprisingly, it showed that both believe that civil litigation takes too long and costs too much. The cause of that failure of the system is likely a combination of district court workloads in some areas and outdated and cumbersome rules. The growing demand on our district judges, particularly in the area of domestic relations and juvenile issues, can prevent them sometimes from resolving cases expeditiously. And by the way, that's another reason to support Senate File 15, which I discussed earlier, that will allow circuit judges to take some of that load. The rules of procedure that we follow today were adopted 72 years ago and have been modified very little since. The intent of those rules is clearly stated in Rule 1, quote, to secure the just, speedy, and inexpensive determination of every action. It is safe to say that we have failed too often to realize that intent. The Board of Judicial Policy and Administration and the Supreme Court have initiated several projects to begin to address these problems. Judge Norman Young from the 9th Judicial District and the current president of the District Court Conference is heading up an effort to examine those rules to see if they can be changed so that cases can move more quickly, especially smaller cases, and without unnecessary expense. Judge Keith Kautz from the 8th District is heading up a group of judges and lawyers to address problems with domestic relation cases, specifically. The circuit judges, under Judge Haas' leadership, are drafting rules for simplified procedures in circuit courts aimed at reducing cost and delay. I anticipate we will consider adoption of these rules in the near future and possibly propose statutory changes next year. As this summary of challenges, changes, and opportunities facing the third branch of government shows, our plate is full. The men and women of the Wyoming judiciary are fully committed to continual improvement in the way we do business, and we invite you to visit your local courts and to see firsthand the quality of your judges. We urge you to continue to provide, as you have in the past, provide us the necessary resources to get our job done. And finally, with the tragic events in Arizona last weekend, we all, as public servants, increasingly feel the weight of our responsibilities. We cannot prevent all acts of anger and violence directed towards those who serve, but we can, and we must, maintain an environment in which institutions of our government and the individuals holding office within those institutions are respected. Our democracy depends on that respect. I thought it appropriate to close by quoting a former governor and senator whose service Wyoming enjoyed and whose legacy has produced our newest governor. In 1965, then Governor Clifford P. Hansen addressed the 38th Wyoming legislature, and he said, "Let me observe that we are elected officials, and as such, we are but temporary custodians of trust, favor, leadership, and responsibility. We know the difference between right and wrong. We know that our sole duty is to give dedication and loyalty to the full public interest. History will deal with us. May the truth be that we gave our best." Thank you very much.
Chief Justice Kite, on behalf of the members of the legislature, I thank you for attending this joint session and for your message to us. Senator Bebout, Representative Shefferson, and Roscoe, will you please escort the First Lady of Wyoming and the Governor from the chamber? Senator Perkins and Representatives Crone and Korberg, will you please escort the Chief Justice from the chamber as well? Mr. Speaker, thanks to you and to the members of the House of Representatives for being our host this morning. Majority Floor Leader Ross.
Mr. President, I move that this joint session be dissolved.
Senate Minority Leader Hastert.
I second that motion.
All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The motion is carried. Senate Majority Leader Ross.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate be in recess until 2 p.m.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no.
No.
The Senate is recessed until 2 p.m. House Majority Leader Lubnow.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House be in recess until 2 p.m.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
No lunch, then. No. The House is recessed until 2 p.m.